Good morning and welcome back to Nachyomi. Today we're going to be learning Nehemiah Perek Hey, the fifth chapter of the book of Nehemiah. This is a perek where we shift the focus from the external to the internal. We no longer look at the survival of the people of Israel, the survival of Yerushalayim from the attacks of the enemy. Now Nehemiah turns into the leader who's worried about the social justice within. And this is a very sharp change. In fact, when people think about Nehemiah, they think about the large and magnificent strides and visions of leadership that he took in the public sphere. This is also the public sphere, but it's the lesser known part of Nehemiah's journey, and it's equally as important. Sometimes leaders have particular ideas about what they want to achieve, and sometimes they realize that there are things they have to achieve, whether or not they chose them. Here's an example. In the first five psukim, we hear about the complaints the people present in front of Nehemiah. He talks about the people, their wives, are calling out to him, and they present a number of different opinions, of perspectives. He describes, in fact, v'yesh. There are some who say, asher omrim boneinu v'noseinu, anachnu rabim, v'nikcha dagon v'nochal v'nichya. So the way this is understood, we're going to go with the Malbim's way of reading this psukim, is that there are people who now have to use their children as collateral in order to be able to get money to buy the necessary foods. So they're in a state of direct poverty, of abject poverty, and they need to use their children in order to be able to get food. V'yesh, and then he gives an example of another group of people. These people say that, you know, our fields, our vineyards, our houses, we are using as collateral. V'nikcha dagon v'rav, but we can't get any food in the impoverished state. What this means to say is these people may have had land, yet what happened was is they had to use that land as collateral, and because there is a famine, their lands are not producing the necessary food that they could have subsisted upon. V'yesh, he quotes other people who look back to the past and they say, even before there was a famine, we had to loan our money in order to be able to pay up Midas HaMelech, which is the taxes of the king, there's local taxes for the various leaders, and we had to pay this up. And what's going to end up happening is they essentially saying is that we're going to have to sell ourselves and our children into slavery in order to be able to pay for food. And v'ein le'el yodeinu, we simply do not have the power to be able to extract our belongings and our family from the other people's hands. It's a very sad state of affairs as they approach Nehemiah. This is the way the Malbim understands it. So what happens? Nehemiah now turns to them, and in the psukim Vov to Yud Gimel, we get his immediate reaction to the situation. And he describes, Vayichar li me'od. He became intensely angry. Just to remember that Nehemiah is a person who believes in the strictest form of justice. This is not just. How can a Jewish society be operating like this? And he says, he hears their cries, and he says, how could it be that these things are going on? So what does he do? He describes, and it's very personal, as he describes, Vayimolech libi olai. I made this decision, he says, and this is what I'm going to do. And I turned to the Chorim, the Saganim, so he turns to the leaders of the people. These are the people, these are Jewish people who are in leadership positions of the nation of Israel. And he gathers them together. And this is pretty intense now. So he goes over to these folks. And what he does is, are you pressing claims on the loans of your brothers? And listen to these words in the Pasuk now. It says, I raised a large crowd against them. What this is taken to mean, as the Mitzuros explains it is that he gathers a large public gathering as he confronts these lords. Their barons, these noblemen, these aristocracy. He pulls them together, and he pulls together also the populace to come and watch this public discussion and dialogue, because he wants to be able to embarrass them. He wants to be able to show the public that these people are not worthy of their title if they're doing such things. And now he goes on for the kill. He says, we have spent so much time buying our brothers and sisters back, who are sold to the nations of the world as slaves, and now you're reselling them. Now, if he's referring to a discrete historical event, not clear, but it does seem clear that during the destruction of the temple, which wasn't so far back in history, there were many Jews who were sold into slavery. So we can imagine that part of the Jewish community's responsibility through the period of exile was, as the Jews started making it financially and politically in their new surroundings, probably one of the major projects was redeeming their brothers and sisters. So what he's saying to them is like this: the whole process of Geula, which we are setting about to try to save our brothers, you are reenacting the opposite. You are going in the opposite direction by allowing them to be sold because of their debts. Now, yes, do they owe you money? Of course. Did they put themselves in that position? Are they somewhat responsible? Perhaps. But that, there's no reason to do this. And now he explains this. He says, you know what? V'omar, lo tova davar asher atom asim, hala biyiras elokeinu telchu mecherpas hagoyim oiveinu. The way this is understood, as the Malbim explains this, is that there are two attacks. There's the strict halachic attack, and that is that he claims that they're using usury interest against their brothers and sisters. So there's a halachic transgression, taking a mashkon, making collateral in a way that is not allowed. But then there's what's called the transcendent value, not just the mere, you so to speak, you know, sif katan, the illegal infraction which can be pointed to, but there's also the idea of being a chilul Hashem. This is the way you treat your brothers in the way he says mecher pas agoyim oivenu, the embarrassment of our enemies who are non-Jews. This is not the way we could do this. So he says to them, he says he makes the request. It's a very simple request. He tells them he wants hashivu na lohem kayom, return to them today. So to say him, karihem, say him, botehem, return to them all of their properties. Everything that you are holding in credit against them, you return right now. In fact, the Malbim adds in to the way that they are making that Nehemiah makes his argument. It's not simply that this perek followed the previous perek because it was a sequential matter. It's also connected thematically in the sense that part of his argument is that we've all been working side by side, digging the walls of Yerushalayim. We've all been working next to each other as we hold our swords and our bows, as we try to stave off the enemies who are going to attack us. We're all brothers. How could it be that those who are sacrificing their time and their money to be able to protect the walls of Yerushalayim are going to the people who you are going to hold against them that time that they lost, that they spent protecting the city? So that's part of the argument that's invested over here. And that's ultimately what happens. They respond, Noshiv Umehem Lo Nevakesh. They said, you know what, we're going to return everything that we did. We're not going to request anything more for it. And Nehemiah is not satisfied. He calls the Kohanim and he makes them take an oath. And he's, in fact, just listen to the extremely powerful sort of image that Nehemiah draws. What is it? What he says is in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Gam chotzni ni'arti. So he shakes out the bosom of his garment, right? So he shakes out his shirt, and he says, Kacha yena'er ha'elakim es kol ha'ish asher lo'yakim es adavar hazeh. You just swore you're going to return all the collateral, all that which is held against people in credit. Well, those who do not do as they promised to should be shaken out like I'm shaking out my shirt now. Mibesoy from their house, umigyoy from all of their efforts. So it's a very, very powerful thing. Nehemiah is not mincing his words. He's taking them to real court, to real justice for this as well. It's a very, very powerful description of here. We now get to the end of the perek for your dalid to your test, the last few psukim of the 19 psukim of our perek, and it is now where he focuses on not so much this particular event, but rather a perspective, a reflection on his governance in general. And he says this, and you can imagine he probably says this to the crowds that are there right now in order to make an imprint on them what leadership is supposed to look like. And he says to them the following. He says, from the day that I was appointed to be a leader, Lios Pechom Be'eretz Yehuda, in the land of Judea. And he describes the tenure of that time. It is from the 20th to the 32nd year of Artaxerxes, so it's a 12-year tenure. He says, from that entire time, Ani va'achai lechem hepecha loy ochalti. I did not consume the bread of my government office, meaning I did not eat of public funds. He describes, Hapachos Arishonim, earlier governors did hichbidu ala'am. In fact, they were a burden to the people. Who are these people? The Da'at Mikra points out that there are inscriptions that we can find archaeologically of earlier pechas, of earlier governors who are Jewish. And so we can assume that there were others here, depending on how we read the timeline. Because according to the way that Chazal's reading it, that we only really have Sheshbatzar and and then Zerubbabel, and now Nehemiah. It's hard to understand, but if there could have been early ones in between, perhaps that Tanakh was not focusing on as well, it makes a lot of sense that he's referring to those ones who are named during history. He says those ones, even though they were a burden to you and they took all kinds of, you know, bread and wine and all kinds of taxes, I didn't do that because of Yiras Elohim. I feared God. So this is a very self-righteous perspective here, justly so. And he describes that even when he was making the wall, Sodelo Kanisi, I didn't buy any fields. Now, what has that got to do with the wall? So the way the Mitzudos and Rashi points it out is that I didn't even have time for personal investment. There I was, my sleeves rolled up, my workman gloves on. I was not investing in the best land because I had the latitude and time. I wasn't taking a cruise. And he describes how he would have 150 men. He would have these diplomatic banquets of 150 guests on a daily basis. And he describes that, in fact, he would have, it's just a remarkable description over here. So these elaborate meals. And he talks about, and every 10 days, is that he had this meal. Now, what does it mean every 10 days? The Mefarshim explained that he would have a ma'aser, he would a tithe of time, meaning he would eat for 9 days, and on the 10th day, he would not eat. He'd have a fast day as a tithe of time. Fascinating practice that he had. And despite all of this, he says, Lebikashti, I did not ask for my office to put it on the tab. I know how hard it is reestablishing a new province. I cannot, in good conscience, ask it of you. And therefore, he concludes, Zachrali Elokai Letova, Kol Asher Asisi Al Amazeh. Remember, please, for the good, all I did. Just, you know, to take a flashback, just to appreciate this, you know, we sometimes think, oh, well, you know, being a leader and, of course, you know, living high and dry, wined and dined, everything is fine. One doesn't appreciate just the significant burden financially on leaders. Just like take an example, during the Second World War in 1940, Winston Churchill, who really had difficult financial situations already for the previous decade and a half, but it came to a fore in the war where he was really under immense financial pressure, and there was rationing going on because of the bombing. There was supplies were being destroyed by the ship. They were having tons and hundreds of tons sunk every month by the German U-boats, and there was a rationing which, in order for him to function as a diplomat, he needed to host diplomats, prime ministers, all kinds of individuals from his cabinet who and leaders around his table. And so he had these elaborate weekends at his weekend house, but he was given a budget of £15 a month, which is essentially $1,000 in today's money. But just to give you a sense of how much he actually did spend, between June and December 1940, he spent over $20,200 more than his budget, just on the meals or entertaining. It costs a lot to be a world leader. In order to be able to entertain, to be able to build those relationships, that's what Nehemiah is describing, is doing it. 150 people at his table. And yet he never asked this of the people. So, you know, it could be, as Roshua points out, that there were people in the audience, there were people in the crowds who would say, ah, Nehemiah was this hard ruler and he was always having these lavish meals, and it was all because of his aristocracy. It was because of the kind of things that he's used to. And Nehemiah is trying to set the record straight for them and for us. Don't think for a moment, now that I'm asking you to release your debts, don't start writing those op-eds in the paper and think that I am this leader colleague disconnected from society. Let me get it straight. Remember, God should remember me for good because I did all of this for naught, for nothing, just because it's right. We remember that Chazal criticized Nehemiah for this refrain, which is going to come up again and again, how he asks that I should remember him for good. But at the same time, if we're to look at it just from an intellectually honest perspective, he is right. Hashem should remember him for the good, because this was, in fact, a very noble deed. With this, we close Perek Hay. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.